expecting too much. Tamara and Mark were delighted when Tamara's parents decided to move from Toronto to Victoria. Tamara had always been close with her parents, and she was missing having them nearby. Mark and Tamara were both pleased at the prospect of their kids, ages 5 and 6, developing a closer relationship with their grandparents. Waving to each other on Skype was nice, but it's just not the same as curling up in a lap with a book or doing craft projects together. Furthermore, Mark and Tamara have been so stressed lately, emotionally and financially. They were excited at the prospect of extra childcare that Grandma and Grandpa could provide. It would be so great to have after-school care Monday through Friday. We have some grandparents in the audience. It's been such a struggle to rush home from work, pick up the kids, drag them along to the grocery store or whatever errand needs doing, then get dinner going while keeping enough of an eye on the kids that they're not endangering themselves or one another. Tamara's been doing the after-school shift, and she's been using the TV as a babysitter more than she'd like to admit. But Tamara's parents have been here 2 months already, and things are not working out the way that Tamara and Mark had hoped. Tamara's parents don't seem excited about hanging out with the grandkids. They have only taken the kids after school a few days a week, and they seem sort of disgruntled when asked to babysit on weekends. Mark feels disappointed. Tamara feels disappointed and hurt. Do her parents not see how stressed out she's been lately? Do they not love her kids as much as she thought they did? Why did they move here if they didn't want to spend more time with their grandkids? Is Tamara expecting too much? Virginia and Helen have been friends for 2 years now, ever since they met in a bereavement group after the passing of their partners. They have been a great support to one another, sharing tea time regularly, accompanying each other to museums, concerts, and the like. Virginia recently gave Helen a delightful birthday filled with attentive details, a handmade card listing all of Helen's virtues, a prearranged video birthday message from Helen's son and 2 grandkids in Halifax, a trip to Helen's favorite garden store or shop to purchase a gift of her choice, and a little dinner party with 5 of Helen's closest friends, complete with party favors, elegant decorations, and a delicious gourmet meal. Helen was most appreciative. But this past week, Virginia's been down with a bad cold, one of those horrible ones that makes you achy, so stuffy it's hard to sleep, and so worn out it's hard to make oneself a cup of tea, let alone get to the grocery store. Helen called at the beginning of the week and sounded sympathetic, but she hasn't called since. As each day goes by, Virginia is getting more and more resentful. After all the effort I expended to give her that lovely birthday, she doesn't even call me back when I'm sick, let alone visit. Whenever my friends are sick, I call every day and visit regularly, bringing medicine, soft Kleenex, and homemade soup. That's just what friends do for each other. She could at least stop by with some soup. Surely that's not too much to expect of a friend. Maybe we're just not as good friends as I thought we were. David is at church. Another church, not this one. A UU congregation far, far away in Florida. Florida. David is getting ready to leave church, but before he reaches the door, Leonard asks him, yet again, to help schlep stuff from one place to another. Asked isn't really accurate. David doesn't really feel like he can say no. What's that term his friend invented for this kind of situation? Voluntold. That's right. David is constantly being voluntold to do this and that. Usually some sort of physical labor, stacking chairs, setting up tables, moving boxes for the rummage sale, and so on. Furthermore, since he's the only one in the congregation with an extra tall ladder, anytime someone wants to hang decorations up high or wash tall windows, they ask David to do it. David doesn't mind helping every now and again, but he is irritated by the assumption that he will always say yes. the implication that he has unlimited time and energy to do other people's chores. He has other things he needs to get done today. It is as if Leonard does not respect David's time or even personhood, like he's some sort of workhorse. But David can't imagine what would happen if he said no. Oh, the shame, the guilt. Leonard would certainly think him selfish and question his commitment to the community. It reminds David of a saying that he learned in AA. Expectations are premeditated resentments. Leonard would certainly resent David if David did not meet Leonard's expectations. David feels stuck. He is tired of people expecting too much of him. What do you do when you feel that someone is expecting too much of you? What do you do when others don't live up to your expectations? As I've pondered this common human dilemma, I've noticed a few complicating factors that contribute to this problem. First of all, the expectation conundrum is complicated when we assume that other people are like us. In particular, that they share our own view of what is reasonable to expect of another person. Tamara and Mark assume that Tamara's parents would share their view that expecting the grandparents to hang out with the grandkids after school most weekdays and some weekends is a reasonable expectation. Virginia assumed that Helen would share Virginia's view that when one is sick, it is reasonable to expect one's friend to bring soup. Leonard assumes David shares his view that expecting him to help schlep stuff at his church is quite reasonable. Turn it around, and you have David thinking that Leonard should share David's view that that expectation is entirely unreasonable. A second complicating factor is that we often equate meeting my expectations with feelings of love, caring, or respect, which means we equate not meeting my expectations with lack of love, lack of caring, lack of respect. When Tamara's parents don't meet her expectations, Tamara worries her parents don't care about her kids as much as she thought they did. When Helen does not meet Virginia's expectations, Virginia worries that Helen doesn't care about Virginia as much as she thought. When Leonard goes beyond David's idea of a reasonable expectation, David thinks it indicates a lack of respect. So then, perhaps a good place to start when trying to work through a situation of this sort is to remind ourselves that other people are not like us. Shauna and I had a line in our wedding vows. I promise to be sensitive to the ways in which you are not like me, seeking to be patient with our differences and open to what they have to teach me. It has been a good guide for other relationships as well. In particular, it is helpful to remember that different people express their caring in different ways. The fact that a person doesn't meet your expectations does not necessarily mean that he or she does not care. Many couples figure this out at some point around the celebration of holidays. It takes her a while to figure out that to him, a birthday doesn't feel like a birthday without candles and cake. It takes him a while to figure out that she feels cared for when he takes the time to choose a special card for her on their anniversary, and that she feels extra loved when he puts thought into adding to the card his own words of affection. You can bet there were a lot of birthdays without cakes and anniversaries without cards before they figured that out together. My friend told me of one Mother's Day on which her husband and the kids gave her a new vacuum cleaner. It was all she could do to not burst into tears on the spot. She didn't want another appliance to do household chores. She wanted something fun, something that recognized that she is a person with a dimension of personhood that goes beyond taking care of the family. Another mother may have loved the vacuum cleaner. You have to get to know what each particular person experiences as a gesture of care. It's the platinum rule we've mentioned before. instead of treating others the way I would like to be treated, I need to try to treat others the way they would like to be treated, which means I have to find out how they would like to be treated, not just assume that they are like me. The Care and Concern team at our church sometimes struggles with this. Each of the 12 neighborhood groups in our church has a Care and Concern representative. The task of each Care and Concern representative is to care for everyone in their neighborhood group, to keep track of folks, to ask how they're doing, coordinate support when folks are ill or in need. This is tricky when different people like to be cared for in different ways. One person may feel pestered and put upon by monthly check-in phone calls, while another may feel neglected if they don't receive weekly visits. One person may feel that all medical information should be kept private, whereas another may want everyone to be kept in the loop. You can see how this would go. Let's say Joe hated it when Anita from church showed up at his bedside in the hospital. He didn't even want the ministers to visit. Why is everyone in his personal business? So then later, when Joe hears that Carlos is having a knee replacement, Joe preserves Carlos's privacy and keeps the information to himself. But then when no one from church visits Carlos in the hospital, Carlos feels neglected and hurt. He doesn't understand why no one came. He made a point of telling Joe both the date of the surgery and the location of the hospital. The Care and Concern people have had a number of discussions about this. How do we care for people when they have such vastly different expectations, desires, and sensitivities about caretaking? What it came down to is that when we care for one another, it serves us well to ask what kind of caring the other would like to receive. Do they want respect for their privacy? Cards, but no phone calls? Phone calls, but no visits? Lots of cards and visits? We even developed a list that Care and Concern representatives can use to ask what a given person might want. Instead of putting the onus on the person in need to ask for help with a vague, "Let me know if you need anything," our Care and Concern people can now say, "We care about you. What of the things we can offer might be helpful to you right now? Someone to walk your dog, rides to the doctor's office, someone to pick up your medicine from the pharmacy?" These are useful techniques when different expectations are at play in general. State that you care, disentangling caring from expectations. Then help the person communicate their needs so you can care for them in a way that they experience as caring. "I love you. What kinds of things can I do for you on your birthday that would help you feel loved and appreciated?" You can also avoid some of the expectation disconnect if you express your own needs directly. If your friend asks how you're doing and offers a visit, you may wish to speak up and say, "Actually, what would really be helpful is someone to visit with my partner who is ill so that I can leave the house and get things done. Would you be able to do that?" In addition to expressing our own needs clearly and directly, it can also be helpful to learn to discern and express our limits. What are your limits? Perhaps you have noticed this phenomenon. When life is good, when you feel rested and healthy and generally content, it feels good to give. You are happy to help. Sometimes, however, you may notice that you are not so happy to help. You may feel overburdened or resentful, a bit like David at his church in Florida. Often these signals are a sign that you may be up against your own limits. For your own health and sanity, it is often wise to state your limits. "Sorry, I care about you and I do believe in this project, but I cannot help in that way right now." Reverend Shauna and I often encourage folks to do this at our church. Participate in the stuff you're excited about. Share your gifts with the community in ways that you find enriching. Please don't agree to do something you really don't want to do out of sheer obligation. I get that this can be difficult, especially when you have a sense that a project will die if it doesn't get enough support, especially if it is a good project for a good cause. I have had that anxious impulse to run around voluntelling people to support something out of fear that otherwise it might die. But sometimes I have to let it die and have faith that something else with more passion behind it will arise in its place. Sometimes when person power dies out, alternate methods are found. Shauna and I were delighted to learn that the parent association at our daughter's school had decided to offer folks an opportunity to pay a fee instead of working relentlessly on those maddening fundraisers that they used to do. We were quite happy to write a check instead of strong-arming family, friends, and neighbors to buy coupon books or magazine subscriptions. The fee is optional. You don't pay it if you feel you can't afford it. And they have kept the fun community-building events and fundraisers that we all enjoy, the Holly Tree Festival, choir concerts, and the like. Folks are happy to put people power into that. We were talking about stating our limits, even when that might mean letting a project die. What do you do when someone expresses their limits to you by saying no to something that you wanted them to do? That's a hard one. It requires some spiritual stretching on our part. I find it helpful to keep in mind those two points we mentioned earlier. One, they are not like me. Maybe something that is relatively easy for me to give is difficult for them to give. I certainly know what it feels like to be pushed beyond my limits. I try to have empathy for them, to feel compassion for the limits of others. Secondly, not meeting my expectations does not mean they don't care. Maybe they care very much, but express their caring in different ways. One person, like Virginia, might express their caring through cooking and party planning. That kind of caretaking comes naturally to her. Maybe another person can't cook to save her life, but expresses her caring through doing helpful tasks. She's very good at fixing things. And maybe yet another person can neither cook nor fix things, but expresses his caring by listening really well, tracking what is concerning each of his friends, and remembering to ask after them. It helps to notice and appreciate the ways in which people do offer their gifts. It makes it easier to accept when they express their limits. When I was in university, one of my housemates and I shared a favorite gloomy quotation, "Expect nothing, you'll never be disappointed." That particular phrasing is a bit bleak, but there is a wisdom to keeping your expectations low. Not with a cynical, expect nothing because life stinks attitude, but with a posture of openness and gratitude. If you don't put your expectations on other people, then you can gratefully appreciate whatever it is others choose to give. So far, we've discussed that when our expectations don't line up with someone else's, it helps to remember that failure to meet one's expectations is seldom an accurate measure of care, love, or respect, to recall that each person has different needs and different limits, and to help one another articulate those different needs and limits. Another useful tool in all this is the practice of compassionate communication, which was the topic of the sermon on November 3rd. The audio of it is now posted on the website if you'd like to listen. You may recall that one of the key features of compassionate communication is that it unearths universal human needs and desires, needs which with which everyone can empathize and understand. You and your friend might have different preferences regarding what kind of birthday present makes you feel cared for and appreciated, but the desire to feel cared for and appreciated is universal. Consider what might happen if we have our conversations about expectations, about our different needs and different limits, with an eye to where our common universal needs overlap. Recall Tamara's parents. One night after the kids are in bed, Tamara's parents might say to her and Mark, "We've been feeling tense when we talk with you about taking care of the kids. We'd like to share with you what we've been experiencing, and we'd like to hear how you've been feeling. Can we talk about it?" After Tamara and Mark agree, Tamara's dad begins, "We love you. We love the kids. We enjoy spending time with them. But we're not as young as we used to be. Mom's back pain is getting worse. My bursitis is acting up again. We enjoy playing with the kids, but when we get home, we are completely exhausted." Tamara's mom chimes in, "I see that you are exhausted and stressed too, and I want to help, so I push myself to do more than I feel comfortable doing, but then I end up feeling resentful. I'm feeling run down because I'm not getting the rest I need. I'm feeling worried because I worry about you and I see the stress you're under and I want to see my loved ones healthy and happy. I also feel a little hurt because I wanted to spend more time with you, all of us as a family, but instead we're just babysitting your kids. I feel a bit used." Wait, used isn't a feeling. "I feel angry and hurt because I want my time to be respected and my efforts appreciated. I feel torn because I can't figure out how to get both needs met, rest for me and rest for you." Now, Tamara has been to many communication workshops, so she is able to keep her defensiveness at bay. She takes a breath. "Okay, I hear you saying that you feel tired because taking care of our kids is exhausting for you. I hear that you feel worried about us and our stress and exhaustion. I hear that your worry, your care for us, makes you push yourself to do more than you're comfortable doing, and that as a result, you feel resentful. I hear that you feel hurt because you were hoping to get to spend more time as a whole family together. I hear that you feel angry because you want to feel that we respect you and appreciate your efforts. Is that right?" Her parents both nod, "Yes." "Oh, Mom, Dad, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that taking care of the kids was taking such a toll on you. I'm glad you told us. I've been feeling hurt because I thought maybe you didn't like being with the kids now that they're older and not the cute little babies they used to be. And you're right, we have been stressed and exhausted, and we appreciate that you care, and I'm grateful that you're trying to help us." Mark jumps in with an affirmative, "Yes, we really do appreciate your help, and we certainly don't want you to run yourselves down." Tamara continues, "I'd love to have more family time, too. There's just so much to do. Anytime another adult is around to look after the kids, I feel like I need to use the time to get stuff done. I love you both. I don't want you to exhaust yourselves trying to take care of us. I want you to enjoy living here. And I feel worried because I still don't know what to do." But now that the four of them have uncovered and reaffirmed the love and concern that they have for one another, separating out that love from expectations, now that they've each voiced their desires and limitations, they are freed up to do a little brainstorming. The grandparents decide that they can pick up the kids from school 2 days a week and stay for 1 hour, which gives Tamara time to do some errands without the kids. They also designate Sunday evening as family night. Tamara's dad, who loves to cook, makes dinner for everyone. With him cooking the meal, Tamara and Mark are freed up to play with the kids, which the kids love. Tamara's mom sometimes joins in, sometimes folds laundry nearby. She's always good for a snuggle and a story. It's not perfect. Their lives are still stressful, but the relationship feels better, and the support of the relationship helps alleviate some of the stress. Likewise, you can imagine Virginia and Helen having a conversation in which Virginia expresses her feelings of disappointment and hurt. Helen affirms her love for Virginia, explaining that she gave Virginia what Helen herself likes when she's ill, space and privacy. Virginia specifies how she likes to be cared for when she is sick. Helen, mindful of her own limits, tells Virginia what she can do. "I don't make soup, Virginia, but I can heat up a can for you. And I'd be happy to read to you while you rest." Again, it's not perfect. Virginia's not getting exactly what she wanted. But the strengthening of the friendship helps a great deal It's much more powerful than a bowl of homemade soup. How about David and Leonard? Maybe David is able to tell Leonard that when David is voluntold to do something, he feels frustrated, hurt, and angry. Maybe he's able to lift up the universal needs that give rise to those feelings, his desire for respect, appreciation, control of his own time. Leonard understands those needs and quickly affirms that he does indeed respect and appreciate David and his efforts. He understands as well David's desire to feel free to manage his own time, his desire for freedom from guilt or shame if he declines to help. And Leonard is able to share with David his own experience. Leonard was raised to be a helper. He was taught that it's just what you do. Dishes need cleaning, you wash them. Boxes need moving, you move them. Chairs need stacking, you stack them. And when you are in a whole community pitching in like that, it's true, many hands make light work. He's been working so hard for so long like this that it does irk him when he sees an able-bodied person walking away from a communal job. He feels hurt, as if this community he loves is being devalued. He feels angry, as if his own work is being devalued. And these feelings intensify the more people walk away and the fewer are left to help, for that just increases Leonard's own sense of overwhelming obligation. "I hear you," says David. "You care about this community and you express that care by working hard. I get that it must feel bad for you when you see others walking away, leaving you with the work." Leonard responds, "Yeah, and I get that you want to be treated with respect as well, that you'd like to have your work appreciated and that you would rather be asked, really asked, 'Hey, I know you're busy. Do you have any time to give today to help to move the boxes, or is today not a good day?' You want an option for a real out and no shame if you have to take off for some other obligation." "Yes," says David, "that would be nice." Really, the two of them are struggling with similar issues. They both care about the community. They would both like their efforts to be appreciated, their personhood and choice to be respected, and they both feel angry when they feel stuck to the job out of obligation. They talk for a long time about obligation and how to get back to that sense of joyful giving, the giving that they are happy to do. Within a month, they have become cheerleaders for one another, encouraging each other to only do joyful giving and say no to obligation. Leonard took a full week of rest. The funny thing is that now they mostly do the same stuff they've always done, but they do it with a grin and a chuckle. "You washing those dishes joyfully, Leonard?" "Yes, I am, David. Want to come help me?" "Can't today. Got plans with the environmental action team. But I am coming to Sunday's cleanup. I'm bringing my neon pink coveralls and the best compilation of Zumba music ever. Looking forward to it." Each of us is unique. We have different ways of giving, different ways in which we wish to be cared for, different limits. Instead of expecting others to be just like us, why don't we get to know one another? Communicate clearly with one another about our wishes and our limits. If we focus on feelings and common human needs, we may be able to build bridges of empathy that lead to relationships of mutual understanding. So may it be.